Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
As the fall semester begins at colleges across the country, the healthcare landscape has changed in many places since the spring. That's after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in late June. For university health centers, that means navigating new and still changing abortion laws. And in some states, campus healthcare providers may have to change how they treat and talk to pregnant college students about their options. Joining us now is Dr. Jessica Higgs, who is president of the American College Health Association. Dr. Higgs, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So can you first give me kind of an overview of what kind of services many health centers on campuses supply?
Most college health centers are primary care offices. So if you think of the primary care office that you go to for your regular health care, that sums up a majority of college health centers across the country. Now, many college health centers may also have additional specialties in their office, and one of those may include an OB-GYN, but not necessarily. So many college campuses in general provide care for reproductive health in terms of testing for STIs or screening. They may provide birth control options. They may do routine pap smears and other routine health assessment in that area. So a large majority of campuses would cover those types of issues.
So what are colleges thinking about or concerned about, especially in states where abortion laws have changed dramatically since June?
Yeah, so we are starting to really look at that, not just starting, but have been looking at it for a while and trying to get really in-depth because it's a different issue for us because it is so different state to state for campuses. So other issues that have come up in the past, such as COVID, was kind of universal across the country, whereas this really impacts some of our institutions and then others are going about their business as normal. So it sort of depends on the state. So we really want to start looking at what the laws are on each state and trying to create kind of a blue book of what that looks like for our institutions. And then things that we're concerned about and looking at how it might impact are things like insurance coverage. Are the insurance companies not going to cover certain medications or certain procedures that they may be covered in the past? Are they going to have access to pregnancy coverage if that's something they hadn't really thought about before? As for our health center physicians, are they comfortable managing pregnant patients that maybe they are seeing more frequently than they had in the past? Or do they have reasonable access to an OB gynecologist in the area that they could refer to and that they have access to that a student would be able to get in relatively quickly for? Looking at childcare, is their childcare close to campus? Is their childcare on campus? If a student decides to have a child, and then how are we going to be able to support that student with that decision? Is there housing accessibility for that student? Generally, you don't think of having a small child in a residence hall. And so do colleges have that opportunity for somewhere that they could live? And over that period of time as well, things like counseling. We've already been seeing a mental health crisis among colleges and across the country, seeing a 40% increase in our counseling centers over the last 10 years. How is that going to impact our visits there? And then any legal ramifications for physicians as well. So is there something coming between the physician and the patient that is not allowing the physician to give the patient all of their options?
Just that, then. Just those things. That very last thing you said, something that may come between the patient and the physician, what does that mean?
So we, feel very strongly that the relationship between the patient and the physician is confidential between those two people. And they need to be able to have a frank and open conversation without concern of other people becoming involved in that. And physicians feel that very deeply because there are often things that, a patient maybe wouldn't tell their parent or their best friend or their partner, but they will tell a physician because it is important to their healthcare. Most medical documentation is, covered under HIPAA. You just can't get a hold of somebody's medical records without their permission because there are a lot of very private, very individual things in there. And with some of these laws that have been coming out where, maybe potentially a physician could be held liable or be charged with a crime if they suggested that a patient maybe get an abortion or other forms of care, or listing that as one of the options in a certain situation, you know, is concerning on that front of do they have to navigate and they not have an open and honest conversation with their patient.
So you were talking about how widely these laws vary from state to state. Let's take just one. Let's take Texas, where there are very strict limits on abortion. It is illegal after about 6 weeks, no exceptions for rape or incest. This is one of the places that you mentioned that where citizens can sue doctors and other people if they've been involved in providing an abortion after 6 weeks. What does this mean for healthcare providers? What kind of advice can you give someone who is at a clinic in Texas?
And I think that's where we're all just trying to kind of grapple with that information. It's so new and so different in terms of the way that they are wording these laws that we're not really sure what does that mean. How can they hold a physician liable for something that's said in a confidential situation? That's the concern. And then, you know, the discussion of could they be charged if they go out of state? Well, how can a state have jurisdiction over something that happens in a different state? So there's just so many questions involved with how those laws are going to be enforced, and are they legal? That sounds weird to say, are laws legal? But, you know, is that a binding situation? And so at the American College Health Association, we're putting together a task force where they're really going to kind of delve into some of these advocacy issues and hopefully be able to find some reasonable advice to give to not only our members that are in that state, but also to our patients that are in that state and how we're approaching it.
Are some of the providers worried that students might try to terminate pregnancies on their own without the advice of a medical provider because they don't have access to abortion care?
That is always a concern. You know, we know from history that when abortion was not legal, there were lots of procedures that were done that were not sanitary, that were not safe, and were not in the best interest of either the patient or the fetus. And so, you know, being able to provide education of what does this mean, what is this procedure, what is this medication that I'm taking, what are the side effects, that's all things that are really important to have that medical discussion about.
So what would you want either the college, let's start with the college student. What would you want the college student to know about their healthcare clinic as we move into the fall semester in a very different situation than we were in the spring?
I think I would tell the college student right now that if they have medical questions or concerns, that they should go to their health clinic and ask those questions. And all of the physicians and providers that are in the health centers, their primary concern is the patient and that the patient is well and focused and, you know, able to succeed in college. That's really where college health is at, is, you know, we want to help bolster the retention rate for our schools and the success rate of our students by giving them a healthy lifestyle and good health to get through what they want to do with their lives. And so that hasn't changed. While the laws may have changed, the care providers want to give the student is the same.
And then what would you say to these healthcare providers? I mean, because we're talking about two groups of people who may be afraid at this point.
You never want to let fear dictate how you do things. And so I think what we always have to reach down to is what do we feel like is the right thing to do for our patient? And I think the biggest thing that we have really counseled, especially to the providers, is with the laws being so different in so many different locations, it's very hard for us to give, like, you know, very specific advice. So reaching out to their legal counsel, potentially for their university, getting their interpretation of what some of the newer laws mean so that they can feel comfortable in how they continue to provide the best care possible.
Dr. Jessica Higgs is president of the American College Health Association. Dr. Higgs, thank you so much.
Sure.